Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Health insurance made easy through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. It is now the 3rd of July and that's a Thursday. How are tricks with you? Dibble a bother on this side. You can join the group chats on the WhatsApp in the usual way. 087 032 32 32. And for your longer letters, you can always email us oliver@rte.ie. Tar is stock. Now, what have we got for you this morning? Jo Kerrigan, the Fairy Forts woman. Remember, she was on with us before a couple of months back. She's coming back on again this morning. She was hellish crack. And her return visit is all about the Brehon Laws, which were here in Ireland from ancient Celtic times, for many centuries, evolving through oral traditions. And it was eventually snuffed out around the 17th century by various invaders and the Christians. So we'll have a chat about how lovely the Brehon Laws were, but were they enacted in a lovely way? We'll focus on the positive, happy stuff, as we always do with Jo Kerrigan. 51551 for your texts. Now, across the water, there is a crying woman on the front pages of the news sites all around the place, and she went viral yesterday. She's the second most powerful person in Britain. Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, resident of number 11 Downing Street. Tears and turmoil as Prime Minister forced to defend Reeves after welfare fiasco. This is the Guardian view, which is usually very favourable to the Labour Party, but not anymore. Bitter recriminations over Labour's welfare bill left the Chancellor in tears and the financial markets in turmoil. The Daily Telegraph, quite a dramatic headline. The pound falls after Reeves' tears. And they've got a close-up of these little globes of tears on the poor woman's cheeks. Now, is she showing some human emotion that's needed in politics, or is she displaying weakness by crying in public view while in a position of immense power? And, of course, the context was her being forced to U-turn on a very cruel cut that she had planned. And her people say, no, it was a private matter mixed with political turmoil. And there's not much sympathy for her in the Tory-leaning press, although they're more Nigel Farage-leaning press these days. If it was a personal matter, why does she have to sit there? And the commentary on the front page of the Daily Telegraph is all about her appearance, looking sleep-deprived, diminished, dishevelled, talking about how her hair, it was not quite what it normally is. Extraordinary kind of times over there. And we'll come back to the Brits and me in a while, because we have our own fiascos going on over here that mean more things for our own people immediately. We were trying to bring you through the ups and downs and ins and outs and a roolia-boolia of the plans for student contribution fees in the incoming term between the Minister for Higher Education, James Lawless, versus the tarnished Simon Harris, who was the minister in that job when they elevated to cabinet after COVID. It's kind of a junior ministry that's sitting in cabinet. He has sought to defuse the controversy. This is James Lawless, the minister for the universities, basically, over the controversy, third level fees. He's seeking resources in the budget to process, in the budget process, to continue reductions to the €3,000 fee next year. So this is Pat Leahy and Mario Halloran in the Irish Times. So James Lawless says it's not possible at this stage to say how much of a reduction, if any, would be in the budget for the students. And he was on Kildare FM, his local station. I'm being very straight, he said. And then he proceeded to be anything but. At this time of the year, we don't have a budget yet. So no minister before me either has been able to say in July what the budget will be in October. Everything is up in the air. Everything is to play for. But you just said 2 seconds ago, you're being straight. If people pay the full amount of fees up front in September, they may well be entitled to a rebate. So there's lots of ifs, maybes, buts, what's going on. So he says there will be a reduction. How much? We don't know when. And the row in the coalition between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is just carrying on. And Simon Harris, tarnished Minister for Foreign Affairs at the moment, he's still insisting there will be a continued reduction in student fees, 3,000. They were reduced by 1,000 during the cost of living measures, but no election site. They're kind of rowing back and all of that. But he's not saying either how much of a reduction there will be or when it takes effect. And now there's talk of maybe instalments, and you might pay an instalment. And then when you get to the budget, maybe those instalments are no longer necessary. What is going on? These are the ups and downs of politics down here. And the ups and downs of politics up north are to do with portraits of the President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins and whether his face graces the walls of Belfast City Hall or not. Sinn Féin is calling on the Lord Mayor of Belfast, Tracy Kelly. She's from the Democratic Unionist Party, to explain her decision to remove a portrait of the Uachtaráin from her walls. It was a reception parlour in the building. It had been placed in the reception room by the previous mayor, who's from Sinn Féin. That was Ryan Murphy. And he put it up after he received a portrait of Britain's new King Charles. And he decided, well, I'll put this fellow up, but I'll put the President of Ireland next to him, side by side. And then there was a formal event to mark that. And Belfast City Council has now confirmed that the portrait is no longer displayed, but is very safely stored, City Hall. So Michael D is now in an attic or a basement or somewhere, they're saying it's safe, but not a pleasant place and not on display, more importantly. Mr Murphy, the Sinn Féin former mayor, says there's no rationale behind the removal of the portrait. What kind of message does it send out to the people of this city who hold the President of Ireland in high regard? The DUP says the decoration of the Lord Mayor's parlour is not yet complete and there will be further artefacts to be added in the next few weeks. Are they suggesting our President is an artefact? I don't think he's coming back onto that wall. And now this is not, no surprise to you, not the first time controversy has arisen surrounding the placement of portraits in Belfast City Hall. Between the flags and now the pictures, will they just get on and do things and stop talking about symbols? 2011, the Sinn Féin Lord Mayor Níl O'Donnell upset unionists when he removed pictures of the British Queen Mother and the late Prince Philip from the same room, the reception parlour. My God, stuff must go on there all the time. And he replaced the Queen Mother with the 1916 proclamation and a portrait of the United Irishman. Oh, that would rankle the Orange people for sure. And then it goes on. And but at the moment, Michael D is in the cooler.
It's not very nice and cool down here, I think. We're not out in the heat. It'd be dreadful.
Jumping back down to Dublin City. Did you know that Dublin City has a motto, by the way? For the past 400 years, the capital of our country has had the motto, Obedientia Civium Urbis Felicitas. I didn't do Latin at school, sorry about that. That translates anyway to obedience of citizens makes a happy city. If you kind of mind, obey, behave yourself, we'll have a happy city. That makes sense. We've never managed to achieve it. So Dublin City Council think it's time for a change. Well, there's nothing else to fix in the city, so you might as well look at the motto that we didn't know existed. So the Dublin Inquirer has been asking the readers to make a shortlist for what the new motto should be. 34% of voters very sensibly said Participato Civium Urbis Felicitas, which means participation of citizens makes a happy city. You see, getting rid of the whole obedience thing because we can't do that. And but second, with 19%, says We Will In Our Whole was the second favourite motto for the city. Tied with a much more nicer phrase, Cadhe an Scéal. What's the story for any of the English, lovely English people that are living here? City of Solidarity come in. Just for fun, they added other suggestions that didn't make the shortlist. This is in honour of Roddy Doyle. I suppose a ride's out of the question. And carrots don't belong in coddle, safer. Followed by Scarlet for everything outside the M50. It has to be said in that accent, to be fair. But for the moment, the Dublin City Councillors are looking for a new motto for the city to change it after 400 years. Is there not historical protection over the motto? Anyway, what would I know? That's the whole point. That's the whole thing. Now, speaking of the heat dome, which continues around Europe, and we were talking about it yesterday, and that heat dome continues to loom. They're expecting it to start to lift, but it's not happening. 8 people have died across the continent. In France, 300 people have been treated for medical conditions, I presume. And in Spain has recorded its hottest June on record. It hit 46 degrees inland in Spain at the weekend. We were chatting to Mandy from Donegal in Paris and to Dara Breheny in Madrid. And someone else got in touch. And it's Robert Howe, who's living in Benicassim. Good morning to you, Robert.
Good morning, Ollie. Spain calling.
Yeah, you're in Spain. You texted us yesterday and said you're in the area between Valencia and Barcelona. And
Barcelona, CC.
What were you doing?
It's an area called Benicàssim.
You were working outdoors, weren't you?
Music festival.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Benicàssim is a site people will know in Ireland as site of a music festival.
That's it, yeah. The Fib. It's quite famous.
What is the weather like there at the minute?
It's hotter than the hobs of hell.
Oh, God.
Even my sweat seems to be sweating. I had a cold shower yesterday, and even in the shower, I was sweating in the cold shower. But yeah, it's continuous. It doesn't let up really at night. Normally, it kind of drops down about 8 or 9 in the evening, and you kind of get a lot of people go out for a walk in the promenade and that. But it's impossible. It was one of the hints that I was giving you yesterday was, you can buy these kind of square fans that are about 2 feet square, and you put them in the window in the evening when the temperatures drop.
Oh yeah,
and that draws in the cold air, and then you have a standing fan in front of that kind of blows it around. But
does it work?
It's fun. It's fun.
It doesn't work.
It does, yeah.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. It works quite well if the temperatures outside are cooler.
When you got in touch with
the guest house.
Yeah, when you got in touch with us, you were doing work outdoors. Were you doing something with decking?
That's right. I'm on the decking. There's a friend coming over, Greg. He's over on Tuesday, and he's a rather large decking, which I am repairing. So we're pulling up old boards and putting down new, and it looks like a patchwork quilt, but like, I didn't think it was physically possible. You know the way if you're head down, you're working, and the sweat is dripping off your nose, it actually turns into a small run. The drips stop, and it just kind of constantly runs. You're putting, I think I drank about 4 or 5 litres of water yesterday. You're putting it in as fast as it's coming out, you know. But, hey, you're first world problems.
Well, yeah.
Be careful what you wish for. And you just might get it.
It's dangerous to work outdoors at the minute, but you look after a string of properties, do you, in that area? What do you do exactly?
Yeah. I'm doing property maintenance and gardening and that. So the winters can be quite slack, you're kind of easygoing. But then come June, July, everybody wants everything up to spec. So You're working in swimming pools and grouting this and clearing trees and doing everything, but you kind of tend to a lot of the Irish holiday makers can't understand this, because why does the guy start cutting the grass at 5 in the morning? Because he has to be finished when it gets hot at 12, you know.
Yeah.
So literally, as soon as the sun is up, you kind of try and hit the road. But unfortunately, this morning we were late starting, as my younger protege wasn't getting out of bed in time, Rob Jr. So
oh, really?
We're a little bit behind today. Can't motivate the youth.
By the way, these are holiday homes you're looking after, I presume.
Yeah, it's a mixture of stuff. I mean, it's kind of Benny Kazim is a bit like Corktown many years ago, well, and built up. So a lot of there's a couple of thousand apartments, which would be mainly owned by Madridians. So they sit idly there all year, and then there's a large amount of holiday homes. So kind of I may have maybe 10 or 15 people that I do different work for, you know, just maintaining and getting the pools clean, and then the chlorine levels you go by maybe.
I was wondering how that goes down with the locals, because obviously there's a lot of protests about over-tourism, isn't there, in that region that you're in?
Yeah. It's mainly homeowners themselves. I mean, I actually built a guest house here 15 years ago myself, because I'm in construction, and we rented out on Airbnb. And it goes quite well, and it doesn't bother anybody because we're in a quiet area.
You're
but we're
out
obviously
from Barcelona,
in Barcelona and that type of thing. Yeah.
And come here, so how long, you mentioned 15 years there. Is that how long you've been in Spain?
Yeah, I'm married to Monica, who's a Spanish national, came over to Ireland and learned Spanish and dragged me back with her. And then we had our first baby because we were both doing quite well over there. We were pound rich and time poor. And now we're kind of the other way around, I guess, now.
Very nice.
And if your next question is, would I go back?
Yeah.
Never.
Never is the answer. Not even with the heat dome.
No, Ireland has changed so much over the last couple of years, but
and
you have to run at such a speed over there just to maintain a level. Where like here, okay, you know, you can still nearly live off one wage here, like it was in Ireland in the '80s, you know. But in Ireland, it's too much pressure, you know.
Oh, stop! We've been talking about it all week. But look, we'll let you get back to it for today. I think it is going to calm down, isn't it, from tomorrow onwards, so hopefully people get a reprieve.
Seeing is believing. 2 or 3 days and then it goes back up again.
Anyway, you're never coming home anyway.
No, that's for sure.
But listen, Rob Howe, thanks a million. I talked over your plug, by the way. I don't know what that was. Yeah. Was that a
Mediterranean Escape, my little guest house?
Oh, is it? Okay. There you go. Mediterranean Escape. Look after yourself.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Get the young lad up
have
and at it. Bye bye bye.
Yeah, he's breaking hard. Cheers. Bye bye.
That's Rob Howe there in Benicassim in Spain. And actually, we're talking about air conditioning, and obviously people pointing out that air conditioning uses up all the electricity and the emissions and so on, causes terrible trouble. But the French far right are now campaigning to bring aircon to everywhere in France as a result of the heat dome, having learned nothing but understanding what upsets the left, basically, and getting headline news and so on. Marine Le Pen in France, who's going to be in presidential election 2 years' time, isn't it? Now, will we jump back to the Brits? The Brits, yes. A year ago, can you believe it or not, the Brits are actually having that reckoning with 14 years of Tory rule. And so they've had now a year of Keir. Because on the 4th of July, which is tomorrow, Keir Starmer won that staggering majority. There are 650 seats in the British House of Commons and Labour won 411 of them. So that was a massive mandate for change. And Starmer's Macroom maestro, Morgan McSweeney, the Cork man, he was hailed as a genius for a while. But now, this week, you have Downing Street humiliated, Rachel Reeves in tears, and Keir Starmer kind of protecting her, but not really, because of the major U-turns on cuts to welfare. First, there was the attempt to remove pensioners from the winter fuel allowance, you'll remember. That was reversed. And then you had this welfare cut to the disabled, and another reversal. And you have one headline saying, pound falls after Reeves' tears. So that's a kind of a sad metaphor for how a year could go wrong. So the Labour Party in Britain has been rattled by all these political mistakes, sapped by the weak economy, distracted by all the foreign disasters, and Starmer's government's basically yet to get off the ground. So they're now trailing Reform UK, a party that barely existed until recently. That's Nigel Farage's chaotic, far-right, anti-immigrant party. Labour trailing them in the polls. There is no threat internally to Keir Starmer's leadership, and there's no election till 2029 that we know of now. But Keir Starmer's personal approval rating has utterly collapsed, even among Labour voters. It is very hard to believe that only 12 months ago, this guy was pitching himself as the best option for Prime Minister of the remains of the United Kingdom.
Have you ever gone without something?
Yeah, I mean, my family emigrated here with very little. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was raised. I was raised with the values of hard work.
What did you go without as a child?
We went out with lots of things, right? Because my parents wanted to put everything into our education, and that was a priority.
So what sort of things had to be sacrificed?
Lots of things, right?
Can you give me an example?
All sorts of things. So like lots of people, there'll be all sorts of things that I would have wanted as a kid that I couldn't have, right? Mm-hmm. Famously, Sky TV. Okay. So that was something that we never had growing up, actually.
God, I forgot how cringy he was. That was Rishi Sunak, former British Prime Minister. Net worth £650 million. And he's still an MP, by the way. And the only good swing, the only upswing for Labour is that the Conservatives have utterly collapsed. But into that vacuum has gone Reform. Now, I was listening to Alistair Campbell, the former Labour spin dude, on his podcast yesterday, The Rest is Politics. And he says Keir Starmer's year basically was marked by two things. You've building really good relationships with foreign leaders, including and especially Trump, to try to deal with everything from Ukraine to Gaza to tariffs. But a complete failure to build relationships at home with his own MPs, which would kind of allow him figure out how best to gently reduce the spending in their slump without the big mistakes of the past week. Now, the London Times put the U-turn on reducing benefits. Even by the impossibly high standards of the last decade, this was a world-class horror show. MPs would be voting on a bill that would still be called the Universal Credit and Personal Independence Payment Bill, but would no longer contain any of the personal independence payment system bit, saying that basically, if Theresa May had come up with an ingenious plan to finally pass her Brexit bill, this would be like removing everything that it had to do with Brexit. That's exactly what happened this week. And so the result is that you have the Labour backbenchers who know their boss backs down when they threaten to rebel. So his power is reduced. And the disability benefits cuts, by the way, they've stopped. But the billions in cuts still need to happen by the end of the year, such as the economic slump caused by a load of things, but mainly Brexit's effect on British exports. They say COVID pandemic, Ukraine and so on as well. And the main legacy of Keir Starmer, which Alistair Campbell also says, is that bursting popularity of Reform. They won 5 seats in the elections in Britain last year, but polls today show they would be on course to win 260 seats in 2029. Labour would have fewer and would be relying on a coalition with the Lib Dems and the Greens to keep Nigel Farage out of Downing Street. But much can happen. That's extrapolating polling, which is 4 years away from an election. The Tory press, by the way, is no longer even for the Tories. The Daily Telegraph hailed Reform's big by-election victory over Labour in May as bringing a level of euphoria we haven't seen since the Brexit vote. This time we do get our country back. And even this week, the editorial in the Telegraph this morning said the following: the Prime Minister's track record is littered with U-turns and backtracks, but his latest reverse has shown that he may not be unable to manage his party, let alone govern his country. And worst of all, just too many people find the poor man kind of dull. Where did they get that idea from?
My dad was a toolmaker. He was skilled as a toolmaker, highly skilled. And he was a toolmaker. He was a skilled man. And it's hard work, it's skilled work.
A year of Keir. And I see this morning Politico is warning that if you thought Starmer's first year was bad, he faces a second year nightmare too. They say it only gets harder from here on out. With populists breathing down the Prime Minister's neck, undocumented migrants continuing to reach UK shores in record numbers, economic growth remains elusive, and squeezed public sector workers, despite sizable pay hikes, are getting restless. And that would affect civil servants in the north, for example, for sure. And the Global View is no better. The New York Times saying there's no shortage of people coming up with ideas on how he can turn things around. But many are gathering around this main argument that his cautious, workman-like centrist government needs to go sharply to the left, which is the opposite of what he's doing at the moment. Stanley Greenberg advised Bill Clinton and Tony Blair. He's a strategist. He says they have to do something. And he says the results show that Labour's best chance to repair its position in Britain, to attract voters, is go to the left of centre, go towards the Liberal Democrats and the Green parties, embrace more left-wing economic policies like a wealth tax, deepen the ties with the European Union, and redouble investment in the Green projects. So at the moment, though, Keir Starmer is so scared of the Nigel Farage future that he's saying more right-wing things to try and undercut that end, which is not going to work. So he's adopting tougher immigration policies. He said in a speech that Britain risked becoming an island of strangers, which echoed 1960s racism from Enoch Powell. Now, Keir Starmer has since said in an interview marking his first anniversary in office that he regrets using that language. But he's also moved very slowly on his main election promise, which was to improve relations with the EU to benefit their trade, because he's afraid of upsetting the Red Wall voters in the north of England who voted for Brexit, swung towards Boris Johnson, swung back towards Labour, and might swing towards Nigel Farage the next time. And so that brings us to what are the positive things you can say about Keir Starmer? And I've looked, and even The Guardian, I can't find good things that they're saying about him. So it should be that distant memory. The voters in Britain have already forgotten in only a single year, because Keir Starmer might be very unpopular there at the moment and faces loads of challenges before things can ever get better. But honestly, could he ever be as bad as that gang that went before him for 14 long years? I know we'll never forget them here.
I will do everything I can as Prime Minister to steady the ship over the coming weeks and months. But I do not think it would be right for me to try to be the captain that steers our country to its next destination.
To Peppa Pig World. I don't know if you've been to Peppa Pig World. Who's been to Pans? I've been anyone who's been to Peppa Pig World. Not enough. I was a bit hazy what I would find at Peppa Pig World, but I loved it. And Peppa Pig World is very much my kind of place.
What's the naughtiest thing you ever did?
I have to confess, when me and my friends sort of used to run through the fields of wheat, the farmers weren't too pleased about that.
I am a fighter and not a quitter. I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected. I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
I know that there will be many people who are relieved, and perhaps quite a few who will also be disappointed. And I want you to know how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the breaks.
Quavers. So that was Mr. Cameron, Johnson, May, Truss and more. Mr. Johnson in the end as well. Poor old Keir Starmer. He's not crying at the moment yet, but he may well. Used to love them, but they don't. 51551 is the text. Good morning, everyone. You keep on giving me.